Hello there. Thanks for stopping in. You're listening to the DM&A podcast, eavesdropping on John Herzog's phone calls. I am John Herzog, and if you like what you hear, why not follow us? Follow the podcast. We are available on most platforms that host podcasts and music and so forth. That would be appreciated. Today, I'm going to give Dennis Brennan a call. Dennis is a veteran manager, retail food service manager. He runs the retail operations for the Reading Hospital in Pennsylvania. And a couple years ago, I was able to stop in, and the place looked fantastic. He's got a lot of real fun ideas and translates into some really successful sales for his operations. He's always interesting to talk to and has a lot of great advice. I'm sure he'll have some for us today and a good story or two always when you're talking to Dennis. Let's give him a call.
This is Dennis Brennan.
Hey, Dennis, John Herzog from DM&A. How are you today?
Hi, John.
What's going on over there?
Oh, lots and lots.
Yeah.
How are you?
Well, you know, we're doing good. I'm here in Kentucky, so I'm not too far away from you. At least I'm on this side of the country. I actually just got back from visiting a client out west in the San Jose area. So that was good to get out and do something, but it was also a little bit nerve-wracking in terms of the airport and so forth. But overall, the experience was good and I felt, you know, comfortable. And the hospital that where I was great. I'm sure all, you know, precautions, it's in some ways maybe the safest place to be because, you know, masks are not even a question. And, you know, they did temperature checks and so forth. So it's good. I know you've been involved and you've been in your facility throughout, but it felt good for me personally to actually be on the ground next to folks that are on front line and get to participate some in that and thank them personally. So it was good.
Good.
But, you know, we were talking the last time I spoke to you, I think it was the last AHF event that I attended, was your regional meeting. And we talked then about, you know, some of the changes that you were doing in retail. I know you were improving the coffee service. And we had talked earlier about some of the ways you've adjusted to your third shift and some of the expansion plans you had. So I'm wondering now, since then we encountered the pandemic, how did some of those plans change? And I'm sure you had to reverse course or alter course anyways. So what are some of the ways that you, were you able to follow through with any of those plans or, you know, where are you now coming out of the pandemic?
Well, I think we're going to be looking at modifying a lot. And it's funny you mentioned this symposium for, Philadelphia South Jersey chapter of AHF. We actually got that in right under the wire. The symposium was held on March 5th. And as far as I know, that was pretty much the end of any kind of organized meetings or groups or anything like that. So we were fortunate to get it in under the wire that way. But, you know, it was a topic of discussion at the symposium in terms of, you know, that was the buzz everyone was talking about, even though nothing like that was on the agenda.
Yeah, true. It really was. That was the last event I attended. Mm-hmm. And, I spoke with some of the vendors. You know, everybody was asking, well, what do you got? Are you going to this show, that show? And I know some at that point, their corporate had already said, you know, this is it. So we're going to shut down after this.
Yeah. And I was actually fortunate enough to meet, you know, the thing about vendor shows is I kind of attack them like Fortress Europe in World War II, you know. Yeah. I hit the beachheads at a vendor show and I hit it hard, you know. I learned so much from my vendors because they're the people that are in and out of different facilities constantly. So I don't get the opportunity to see other operations like they do. And, you know, I pick their brains constantly to find out what other people are doing and what new ideas they've seen and everything else. But the timing of that was there were probably three or four different vendors that, you know, I spoke to that day that were offering new types of products that I was able to avail myself of once this COVID-19 situation started to happen that dovetailed perfectly with like no contact service and things like that. So the timing of that was very, very fortunate.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you look at vendors that way. I always felt that way. Even my days as a director, you know, they're the ones that you get a good relationship with your vendor, one of trust, and that you can glean so much information from them. That's a positive way to look at that. I love those vendor shows because, you know, I get to clearly meet customers, potential new customers, but I like talking to the other vendors quite a bit. It's mm-hmm. nice when you get somebody cool. I like having someone with food on one side of me and someone with coffee on the other side.
That's exactly right.
And at your AHF symposium, John, that's exactly what I had.
John, I have to tell you this. In a previous life, my wife and I were getting ready to open up a coffee shop in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So we attended something that they refer to in the specialty coffee industry as Coffee Fest.
Nice.
And it's an event that's held twice a year, usually once in Seattle in the summertime, and then there's a traveling one every year. So my first Coffee Fest was in Seattle, which is, of course, the capital of coffee. And we're trying different coffee vendors out, and I'm trying to taste people's coffee and espresso to find out who I'm going to use as, you know, my supplier for espresso beans. And toward the end of the day, you know, I'm just talking with a vendor, and he's looking at me very strange. And he says, "Do you want to try it?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll try it." I said, "But I have to tell you, it's the 24th shot of espresso I've had today." And he just looked at me, and he said, "Dude, you're supposed to spit it out." So that became my record for the number of espresso shots.
I would say, like, that's pretty, I should have had that same advice from someone when my wife and I were in Napa for our first time a couple of years ago. Should have spit some out. That's funny.
Yeah, I stopped talking about a week later.
Yeah.
So you were talking about the plans and stuff like that. We actually had already gotten here at Reading Hospital, we had five different retail outlets of varying size. The largest cafeteria, another grill type operation in another building and on another floor, a Starbucks kiosk, a kiosk in the new OR building that is another specialty coffee vendor, and then a Tower Cafe, which is on the extreme end of the campus. So, you know, we kind of cater to a different demographic, I guess, for each of them, in that, you know, it kind of narrows in and fills in, you know, with what people are looking for, and we're able to keep everybody happy that way. People have their own favorite outlet that way. But the oldest of the outlets here it goes by the name of Patio Grill. And other than a paint and paper renovation 11 years ago, it really hasn't been renovated, I don't know, since Pegasaurus roamed the earth. You know, it was a very, very old outlet. All the cooking equipment was electric. It was serviceable, but, you know, it was old. Very difficult to clean and keep clean because everything was, you know, attached and tough to move and not necessarily on wheels. So that was the last outlet that we were looking at for a renovation. All the others have been, you know, are either new or have been renovated in the last couple of years. So we had an initial design already done. We had talked to the kitchen designer and gotten the first draft copy of what the new Patio Grill was going to look like. Well, we based that on the same model for the cafeteria renovation, because that had been extremely successful. That's about 6 years old now.
Yeah.
And it was based on a self-service model, because my retail background tells me that the way I can service the largest number of people in the shortest amount of time is, you know, to make the food available to them. They go for what they want. They don't necessarily have to wait in line for food unless they're looking for, you know, food cooked to order, like at a grill or something like that. So we based it on this cafeteria model, which had been so successful for us, self-service. Well, that's all changed now. That cafeteria, that same cafeteria, we had to shut down the du jour station where people could take, you know, the chef's menu for the day and just take as much or as little as they want of, you know, a couple different entrees, a vegetable, a starch, a side. The pizza station, you know, once they came out of our pizza oven, they were all self-service. The salad bar, I know a lot of places have done away with salad bars, but it was something that our employees at the hospital really wanted. And it was something that we were able to offer about 50 different ingredients every day on the salad bar, and changing up about 15 of them to keep it, you know, new and exciting for folks. So that salad bar was the first thing we had to shut down.
Yeah,
so consequently, you know, with the cafeteria changing that way, that first draft that we've had of the design goes right out the window. So we're going to rethink that. Now we're going to be thinking about it more in terms of how much can we do that would be contactless, and integrate the technologies that are being offered out there with online ordering and you know, phone apps and things like that, where, you know, people can put their orders in ahead of time. It integrates with our Seaboard/Odyssey payroll, you know, deduction.
Yeah.
And, that way people can come in and pick it up and either choose to go back to their work area and eat, or, you know, hopefully spread out in a seating area. But that's where we're going to have to go with that design.
Yeah. I think that that's, you know, regardless of, I mean, eventually there is going to be, you know, a vaccine, and it may be a matter of years before things, you know, really flesh out exactly how things are going to move forward. But I think if there can be any silver lining in something as tragic as this, in terms of how it impacts, you know, our businesses is, you know, the things that you were saying, those are all topics that we had all talked about in terms of how we might look forward and what's the future look like prior to COVID, you know, those discussions. And it was based around, you know, like payroll deduct and apps and delivery. And those are all talked about, but nobody was, and not too many places were in a position either financially or really ready to make that jump. But I think now, I mean, that obviously demand has gone up the priority ladder, and it's no longer going to be, you know, maybe we should do this, but we pretty much have to do this. And I think from a customer's point of view, you know, that's great. I mean, that is the way of the future. I know for years as a director, the problem was always you've got 30 to 40 minutes as an employee for your lunch break, but you have to wait in line to, you know, at the grill or wherever, and then you have to wait in line to pay. And then, so if the infrastructure was in place that you could have the delivery and the cashless and the app, that would solve a lot of problems. Third shift also. I know when I visited your site, you know, you had a pretty nice solution for that third shift. Is that still?
It know, is. And sales there have been steadily increasing.
Mm-hmm.
We keep on trying to find new items to offer to them. Unfortunately, that kiosk, it's manned by three people during the week and two people on the weekends on the third shift.
Yeah.
But there's really no hood exhaust or fire suppression. So basically, you're talking about a Murray Chef, a panini press, a Froyo machine, a sandwich board, lots of grab-and-go supported by the main kitchen. But the people that we have on that shift, we actually were able to get one of our first cooks from the main kitchen that's worked during the day. Her family life changed such that the overnight shift was actually more attractive to her. Between her and her husband's work schedule and all that, it was really attractive for her to work the third shift. And she's such a talent and so aggressive in terms of, she's really gotten to know the overnight staff fairly well. And she wants to do things for them. So she's constantly doing specials and different items and playing around with a Murray Chef a million different ways to figure out, you know, what else she could be doing to keep them interested and also keep them from getting bored.
So, you know, I I got a sense when I was there, and you know, you're a successful leader in terms of having a you know, team development. What were some of the impact of this, you know, the changes? I mean, did you encounter any kind of substantial change in morale or anything you did in particular to kind of keep the forward positive progress going?
Well, let's just say, you know, like a lot of institutions or health systems, we did have a reduction in force last week. And at this particular hospital, you know, it was fairly severe. We are kind of like the mothership for the rest of the health system. But in the nutrition services department, once we kind of saw the writing on the wall, even before we were officially notified that anything like this was going to happen, the director of the department and I and myself sat down, and we kind of figured that there was a way that we could minimize the impact on patient feeding by absorbing the hit in retail. So we took that patio grill that I was talking about earlier, that's actually due for the renovation anyway, and it was going to be closing, you know, fairly soon anyway, if that renovation is going to happen now. But we were able to close that and take half of the staff and redeploy them. And, you know, we lost, you know, a fair number of good people that, you know, didn't necessarily do anything to, you know, deserve losing their jobs. But it was, you know, it's an unfortunate part of business. It's always horrible telling somebody they don't have a job anymore. Even more so when it's not something that they did.
Yeah, that is tough. That I'm really sorry to hear that. You know, for the, certainly heart goes out to those folks and others that are impacted that way. Mm-hmm. But you're right. That is always a difficult conversation, even if it's you know, a disciplinary or whatever. But yeah, when there's absolutely nothing they did, that is heartbreaking to have to tell them that.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, when I got to thinking about, you know, when I was planning it the last couple days before it was actually going to happen, you know, I got to thinking about people's mentality of after something like this happens. You know, everybody's natural instinct is to kind of hunker down and hide a little bit because you can't hit a moving target, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, just kind of like you know, you don't even want to be seen because you don't know who's next or something like that. So just knowing the way that the hospital usually does things here, and knowing that it's usually kind of a one and done thing and done reluctantly, of course, you know, I got my supervisors and my shift coordinators together, and I said, here's what the natural instinct is. The natural instinct is, you know, to just go around with the doom and gloom mentality and feel for it and all that. I said, who we have to be thinking about right now is all the rest of the employees of the hospital that are also going through this, even the ones that remain behind. And knowing that, you know, they're taking an emotional toll, getting an emotional toll as well. So instead of us just, you know, kind of slowing things down and simplifying things, now is actually the time for us to put our foot on the gas pedal. You know, let's go back to, you know, doing the kinds of things that we've become known for, running specials and having different promotions and all that. You know, you and I have talked before. My background wasn't, most of my career was not in healthcare. I've been a food and beverage director in hotel environments. In my 20s and early 30s, I actually ran nightclubs and large entertainment complexes. So our cafeteria and the other outlets were constantly running these promotions, whether it's, you know, Pi Day or, you know, like a holiday like Memorial Day or July 4th coming up or whatever it is. We're always trying to find an excuse to break up the normal menu, decorate the cafeteria, give something for people to notice something different going on and have fun, you know. I remember having a beach party a couple of summers ago. Now, I wasn't able to transport sand into the cafeteria because EVS wouldn't let me do that. You know, we covered the floor with inflatable beach balls. You couldn't walk 2 feet in that cafeteria without kicking, you know, like a 15, 16-inch beach ball that's inflated. So naturally people are picking them up and hitting each other, you know, with them. They're just having a ball, you know? So that's the kind of stuff. I don't think about the retail outlets like, okay, this is a hospital cafeteria. Yeah. I think about it as a place where, especially with us, there's nowhere to go anywhere near here to get something to eat. So we have a captive audience. Our participation rate is through the roof, you know? So I need to change things up and keep it exciting and keep it different. And that's the kind of like outside the box promotions and goings on that we like to do.
So you're going to roll some of that out now, starting to even with some of the restrictions and guidelines and so forth?
Yes. As long as we can still do it, you know, doing it the same way. It's a, you know, we have a simplified menu for July 4th with, you know, barbecue chicken and corn on the cob and all that. We'll just be serving it to them instead of having it self-serve. But, you know, we'll do the decor and all that. But I'd like to bring the beach party back, you know, for August. I think we can do that. And, you know, that'll be a different menu and all that. But just, you know, the people that are left behind, the people that are still here and all that, you know, they deserve to be, you know, told in a way by food service that, you know, we really appreciate you being here. We know what you're going through and we're just trying to brighten up your day a little bit.
That's great, man. That really is a great way to look at it, Dennis. And you're doing some good work for sure. So you had mentioned that you did came from the nightclub and hotel world. I mean, a lot of us came to healthcare food service in various ways. What was your very first job?
Corner grocery store. I grew up in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Right next to a neighborhood called Kensington. So some people would know where that is. I worked at the corner grocery store delivering groceries. I was 12 years old. But I worked in that store on and off probably until I was 18, doing different stuff, you know, starting to work in the deli when they could trust me with a slicer, ringing the cash register. But it's funny, you know, that you mentioned that because I think about the two guys I worked for there often. It was a father and son. They were from South Philly, South Philly Italians. And they were the two hardest working guys I ever met in my life. Okay?
Yeah.
And I think about them all the time because, you know, they taught me a lot of stuff that I still do to this day. It's funny, one of the innovations that we tried that we do here in our cafeteria, employee cafeterias, this time every year, starting, you know, in the month of April, actually, when fresh berries start to become plenty available is the beginning of our year for our farm stand. We don't just do local produce. We start getting produce when it starts to become abundant, no matter where it is. And then when the local stuff's available, we incorporate that as well. But the hospital allows us to sell that produce at cost to the employees. It's part of a healthy eating initiative and employee wellness initiative.
That's a great idea.
It is. And I had a lot of fun putting the farm stand together using, you know, one piece of refrigerated equipment I have in there. But, you know, the produce would kind of spill out around and in front of this refrigerator. And I began to realize that the way I was setting it up was the way that Art and Jerry taught me to do it 50 years ago.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You know, the way, you know, I would put out
peaches
with local tomatoes in it, and there would be a false bottom in there like they taught me, so that you're not putting all the weight on the tomatoes at the bottom of the basket, and stacking the fruit up. I actually took pictures of it and sent it to the one guy's daughter. And said, you know, I figured you might recognize this. She says, that's how my dad used to do it. I said, exactly.
Man, that's a great story, Dennis. That's cool. And, you know, I'm thinking while you're telling that, I'm listening to that, I'm thinking of people down, you know, that had that impact on me. You know, where was it that I got my ideas and examples of, you know, work ethic and working as a team and those tricks and that, you know, that we all have that. That's really cool. That's extra cool that you sent her his daughter that photo. That's really nice. Thanks for sharing that. And as leaders, you know, we always, I hope that we have maybe been that person to somebody down the line. You know, I'm sure over the years you've had some pretty good success stories, people working, you know, with you. So, man, that's cool.
Is there a better feeling to watch somebody that you worked with and took an interest in? And is there a better feeling than watching them succeed, even if you lose them to somebody else?
Yeah, absolutely.
You watch them succeed and even surpass what you've been able to do. Yeah, it just makes you feel so good.
It's double that feeling of fulfillment when it's somebody that, you know, maybe was the employee that you had that you thought could never do anything. And then you catch up years later, you know, and they're in a leadership role somewhere doing really well. Yeah. So
I had a guy that I worked for one time that he also showed me a lot of what I learned and still use to this day. But I didn't realize he was developing me. You know, I wasn't to that point yet.
Yeah.
But he told me when I was looking to develop people, I needed to look for attitude and aptitude. He said, everything else can be taught.
Right. That attitude and aptitude.
Yeah, they had to be willing to work hard and do the work, and they also had to have the ability to do it.
Yeah. Well, sage advice, certainly, in our industry. Well, man, I really appreciate you taking some time today to catch up. I hope that our paths cross as conferences and so forth open up. And, I wish you luck. It's, again, my heart goes out to your team that you had to let go. But it sounds like you're on the right path and are making some positive strides in you know, what you're – those that you are, you know, still working with.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for a call. And look forward to seeing you soon.
Yep, same. You have a great weekend, Dennis.
You too.
All right, bye. Yeah, that was great. I knew it. Always a good story from Dennis. Good checking in with him. Not all fun and games. His talk, he talked about what it was like to go through a reduction in force as a result of the pandemic. Talked about how some of the plans that he had were obviously put on hold, but also mentioned some of the positive and good things that he's hoping to bring out of the tumultuous times that we've all encountered. And he had an awesome story to end the call with regarding stacking tomatoes. So, hey, listen, if you like the podcast, follow us. We're on all the platforms. You've been listening to the DM&A podcast, eavesdropping on phone calls with John Herzog.